Growing up at St. Anne's in Northwest Atlanta, Episcopal Church, all the prayers, or most of them, in that old 28 Book of Common Prayer ended the way they usually end in our prayer book, which is with the words, "Through Jesus Christ our Lord." So I was well into high school before I realized Christ was not Jesus' last name. And it was even later after that I realized that Christ is not a Christian term to begin with, or not first of all a Christian term, but rather it's a Jewish term, right? It's the Greek translation, Christos, of the Hebrew word, which we translate Messiah. So through Jesus the Messiah, through Jesus the Christ. And both Christ and Messiah, as you well know, means anointed one, so it could be a prophet, a priest, or a king, because they're all anointed. But in practice, the Messiah came to be understood as someone who would be in the line of David, King David, and that he would, this king, would, through him, God would rescue Israel from the pagan enemies. In Jesus' day, some thought the Christ would establish God's reign by throwing out the Roman Empire. That would always be a good start, throw out the foreign invaders, and purifying the temple so they had a sense again that Yahweh again dwells in the temple. Now, one thing no one believed about the Messiah, and that was no one believed that the Christ would be crucified by the Romans, because a crucified Messiah is a contradiction in terms. A crucified Messiah can only be a failed Messiah, of which there had been many before Jesus and many after. And he was just another one that thought God had called them, Rome executed him, and that should have been it. But then, right on Easter night, he shows up. The risen Christ shows up. And the disciples realize that when Peter confessed Jesus to be the Christ at Caesarea Philippi, that he was telling the truth. That yes, indeed, he must be the Christ, because through God he has overcome death and the grave. But a strange Christ, a strange Messiah, an odd one, because he clearly did not defeat the Romans. They're still there. Nor did he transform the temple, although he did that thing the week of his crucifixion, overturning the tables, a symbolic kind of cleansing. So what does this Messiah, what does this Christ do? What does it mean to claim that Jesus is the Christ? Well, I don't feel called by God to give the next year of my life trying to learn that and tell you that. That's a big, big question. But let's look at a little bit of it. If you look at 2 Corinthians 5:17, Paul writes, "So if anyone is in union with Christ, he is a new being. The old state has passed away. There is a new state of things. And all this is from God," Paul says, "who has reconciled us to himself through the Christ." So as Paul Tillich wrote a famous sermon, you know the name Paul Tillich, some of you taught theology in the U.S. for many, many years, came over from Germany, wrote some sermons in the 1950s. One was called The New Being, one of his most famous. And he said the fundamental message of Christianity is that in and through Christ, a new creation has occurred. A new being, that's a capital N and a capital B, a new being has appeared, and we're all asked to participate in that new being, that new creation. Even though we're still in the old creation, we're not all brand new, but in some sense, Jesus out of the future has brought that new creation to us in his own being. He has manifested the new creation, and therefore we can call him the Christ. And so we need to be clear, right, that the proclamation of the church is not a new and better religion called Christianity. So I know Episcopalians don't do this, but some churches love to argue about which has the better religion. Please, let's avoid that, because all religions are subject to the seventh chapter of Romans. And I want to thank Dave for doing a brilliant job of reading that most difficult of all passages with, I want to do this and end up doing that, no and yes, and it's really difficult. But we're all subject to that. Doesn't care if you're a Hindu or a Christian or a secularist. We delight in the law in our minds, but somehow between that delight and getting things done, things fall apart. We all know that. We all know we're captive in some way. So we do not find salvation by finding the best religion or the biggest church or the most popular secular system, if you're into, you know, that. Doesn't matter how highly religious you are or highly secular, for both are under the powers of the old creation. And so what does Paul say? He says, wretched person that I am, who will rescue me from this body of death? I've said that. I imagine you've said it or at least thought it. The times we feel trapped in our own personhood. So what saves us? What saves us in this life? And that is simply the encounter with Jesus the Christ, who brings new creation to us. And therefore, he calls to us this moment, and this is my long winding road to this passage, come to me, all ye that are weary and are carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you'll find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. We all can relate to the need to drop our heavy burdens. And so he's inviting us day by day to step into his yoke. The heavy yoke is the one you and I carry around trying to control and run our lives. The easy yoke is the yoke he puts on us in the new creation. To be yoked. So you might ask, well, what does it mean to be yoked to the old creation? Well, just think about anything you watch on TV or the internet, whatever our culture is teaching us. And please don't say, well, I'm an American. I'm not yoked to anyone. Yes, you are. You're yoked to something. We are human beings. We're bound to be, whether it's a secular something or an American something or a, you know, if I win more, therefore I'm better or more fame, or a lot of commercials say, you know, be thinner, younger, and richer, and that will give you life. And we all like to live in the denial of our own brokenness. To be yoked to Jesus, on the other hand, is to be apprenticed to the new being in order to learn what his way, his loving, serving, self-sacrificing way of living in this world. So he doesn't call. There's nowhere in the New Testament where Jesus says, I want you to now take on a new religion. We've created a new, better, stainless steel, bulletproof religion called Christianity. That's not what the New Testament says to us. What it says to us is, come to Jesus the Christ. And nowhere does Jesus say, believe these three things and you will fulfill the minimum requirement and you get your ticket punched and you get to go to heaven when you die. Rather, he says, come unto me, learn from me, for I'm gentle and humble of heart. To the extent that any individual or church or movement looks like Jesus loving and serving and sacrificing, that's the manifestation of Christ in the world. And Christ has manifested Christ's self through you this day already. Especially any of you that deal with children, you are manifesting Christ all over the place, and the kids are too. You just think about that scene on the playground, the lonely kid who's, everybody's picking on him, and he's over in the corner because nobody wants to play with him. And then the little girl walks over, sees him, and begins talking and including him in life. That's a sign of new creation. So we don't have to pass a belief test. You don't have to pass a certainty test. All that is required is to let Christ pull us into his easy yoke of unconditional acceptance, forgiveness, and healing, and then live out of that place. That new reality appears in Jesus the Christ and is drawing all of us, all humanity, to Himself. And we've got to have that vision, because with the news tells us everything's falling apart. It's all bad all the time. Well, it's not. There are all sorts of good things been going on. Far fewer people are being killed now in the world than 20 years ago. It's an absolute fact. We have to have this vision of what Christ is doing, or we might just succumb to the negativity of the day. And so how does Christ do this? Well, He trains His disciples. So let's look at an example. They're walking along, you know the story, and they're having this deep, profound discussion about which of them is the greatest. I don't know, when did we stop having those discussions as kids? I know we had them in fifth, sixth grade. I'm not sure when they stopped. But God willing, we hope they stopped. And Jesus sits down these grown-ups and says to them, you know, this is how things are in the old creation. This is not how things are going to be with you. Because here you're going to judge the greatest by the one who serves. That's how you're going to know who's great. The one on their knees, washing feet, handing out water, taking care of the sick. Then you'll have some idea about greatness. Another significant issue we have in our culture is our culture does not value the inner journey. Think about that a minute. Richard Rohr talks about that a lot. Our culture does not call out its people to go on a deep journey. I mean, the deepest you get on commercials is buy a Volvo and it'll heal your soul. That's about it. Why don't we do that? Why don't we go into that deep inner journey? Well, because our culture tells us you've got to value rationality and logic and practice denial at all costs. And there we'd miss the new being who wants to walk with us on our own journey of faith, our own way of the cross into healing and wholeness and transformation. So Christ is actively working in your life at this moment and in every life around the world. Some may resist it and some do, but they never are able to stop Christ from loving them. And you say, well, what do you mean Christ is actively at work in every life? There are some people doing terrible things out there. You don't mean to say Christ is out there working in them. I do mean to say that. And just look at it this way. Some of the greatest examples of new being in the world were, before their encounter with Jesus, some of the worst sinners, right? Take St. Paul, locked up the followers of Jesus, killed a few, involved in the stoning of Stephen, and yet Christ hadn't given up on him. Or take the composer of the hymn, Amazing Grace, Anglican priest John Newton, had been captain of a slave ship, carrying human beings to a hell on earth. How did that happen? It happened because the Christ had been working in his life to bring him to healing and wholeness. Both were yoked to the new being and brought to life. So just to end, the Christ finally is not a Jewish term or even a Christian term. It's a cosmic term. The cosmic Christ, drawing everyone and everybody back from that which we came, the love of triune God.